Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Lob podcast with These Football Times. For this edition, we are actually recording in London, in the capital city, where we've been given incredible access to a very special guest about a very special film. But before we talk with our guest and get into more detail, I would like to introduce my fellow traveller and companion down in the big city, Mr. Stephen Scragg. Stephen, how are you, sir?
Oh, very well, thanks, Stu. Very well indeed. And what a great thing to be doing a podcast about.
Excellent. And it's like the podcast has gone on tour for this particular episode, trying to find our way around London.
Yeah, the Lob on the road. That's basically it. We should get, you know, if we do another one on the road, we'll have to start to look at tour t-shirts maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, you know, the podcast is about the new Diego Maradona movie, and a little bit later on we're going to be chatting with the Academy Award winning director Asif Kapadia. But before we chat with Asif, you and I were invited to a special screening a few days ago.
Yep, and we were very, very lucky, you know, to be invited along to go and watch these pre-release showings of the Diego Maradona movie, and just a massive privilege, and just such a fantastic film to go and watch. It was, you know, utterly, utterly captivating from the first minute. Completely, you know, it's not catches the imagination, but it's a case of capturing an essence of something, you know. And you know, whether you are a lover of Maradona, whether you despise him, there is no way you can walk away from watching that film without some kind of epiphany about him.
I've seen, obviously, when we found out we were lucky enough to get these, you know, and Asif's also the director for Senna, obviously about the motor racing genius that is Ayrton Senna, and then Amy, which is about Amy Winehouse. And, you know, and this Diego Maradona movie was sort of the third part of this trilogy, and all three of them sort of capture almost an unseen, you know, there's very much the public perception, the public idea, the public opinion of these three characters. And then, you know, certainly when you watch the Senna and the Amy one, you find a, you know, slightly different perspective. And I think, you know, people who watch this, and obviously we can't give too much away in this, but I think when people get to see, you know, the Diego Maradona movie, that it's very much in that similar vein, isn't it? They're almost going to see a slightly different perception of Maradona, the person, if you like, as opposed to the player.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, the way that Asif does his films is, you know, to summing up this really outstanding reflection of the character that he is projecting. You know, I watched Senna, you know, well, I absolutely adored Senna the movie, captured him perfectly. And then I watched the Maradona pre-screening, and I hadn't seen Amy, and I went then and watched Amy afterwards. And yeah, all three have exactly the same, you know, effect, is that, you know, it's the humanity within the character that he absolutely draws perfectly. You know, these characters just come to life, and it's the personalities and the whole infrastructure of their own personalities and the life, that the insane life basically that surrounds them.
You're right. We can't give too much away, because he might cut our interview short later on if he finds out we've given too much away. But it's, the way these are filmed, and you know, and hopefully when you know people have listened to this, because you know this will come out before it goes on general release, but hopefully when people have listened for this, listen to this, and it'll sort of increase their appetite to go and watch it. But you do feel it, and it's certainly the same with the Amy Winehouse one, but very much with this Maradona, and you almost feel like you're in that world, you're in it, you're sort of living it with him. It's that intense and that claustrophobic, and the video footage is so personal that you're automatically transported into that world for the best part of 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's absolutely raw. That's the only way I could really do justice to a description of it. It has such a raw edge to it. You know, you're literally, you know, you are, you are along for the ride from word go. You know, I'm not giving much away there, in that you'll have seen it. You know, if you've seen the trailer, and there's the clips of the car chase, and that's how the film starts. You are along for the ride right from the very start, and it doesn't stop. It just keeps on going. It's such a fast paced. It's 2020, but it is so fast paced that you are just kind of like. It is. It's almost a white knuckle ride.
Yeah, it is. It's yeah. It's a very good way to describe it. And I think it's funny because when we found out we were going to watch the film, and then we found out we were going to be lucky enough to interview have Asif as a guest on the podcast, and somebody sent me a tweet or a message, and they said, oh, is it. You know, is the film very much just a rehashing of the story, or is there anything, is there anything new in the story? And it's quite hard to describe, isn't it? Because, I mean, people who are true fans of Maradona will know the story, and the majority is set in his time in Naples. But there are still, I'm a big fan of Maradona's, and, written quite a few articles on him as you have as well, Stephen, about him for these Football Times. But yet, you sort of watch the film and you just see. I think it's the fact you see it from a different perspective is what makes this film so intriguing.
I think there's a bit of kind of like genius within that, is that if you can tell, a well-worn story, but from but give it a different perspective, a different angle. You know, you are watching something that you have seen before, but from a slightly different angle, from a more compassionate angle. you can't not feel for him partway through. You know, no matter what you think of him going into the film, you'll think something different of him by the end of it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think, and the other thing that sort of astounded me, I must have seen hours of footage. When you're sort of researching articles, and we've talked about it before, you get lost down rabbit holes on YouTube watching football matches and footage. But there just seemed to be something on that. With a soundtrack and with a big screen, you even as a player, you sort of saw things, and I came away thinking, he was even better than I thought he was. When you look at the pitches and the treatment and the sort of the different camera angles, and I came away with almost an enhanced respect for his footballing ability. I mean, you talk about the modern game today and no tackling from behind, and these pristine almost carpets that the game's played on, and then you watch this film and you watch the playing surface and the treatment, and I came away with almost, like I say, an enhanced sense of admiration, really, for his actual ability as a footballer alongside everything else that you get from the film.
Oh, completely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, you look at where he came from as well. Where he was kicking a ball around in his formative years, and then when you're seeing him on the pitches at the San Paolo, and how arid they are, how dry they look, and how he crashes to the turf so often, it's punishing. But even then, it must have felt like, the greatest pitch in the world to him, from where he had come from, where he had travelled. Which is amazing, really. It's almost like he was playing against blunt instruments almost, with the thudding of the defenders and the crash into the turf of what would be a bone dry, very very hard piece of turf that he would hit.
I mean, it's funny, people always, when people try and talk about different generations of footballers and how would so-and-so survive in the modern game, you know, and you hear how would Maradona, you know, survive in the modern game. But I think I always look at it from a slightly converse perspective and think, you know, if you put Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, Eden Hazard into 1980s Serie A football, how would they survive? So, you know, don't bring Maradona to the modern game, bring the modern players into the past game and maybe look at it from that perspective.
I'll fully subscribe to that. You know, I think there was just a greater edge to the players that Maradona played within his era. You know, they weren't, you know, chosen at a very young age and given a path to plot through to a career at the top level, you know, and being well paid as 12 and 13 year olds. You know, these were players who had to fight for the future in the game. They earned absolutely everything. They fought tooth and nail to get where they were. There was no scope for these players to cruise. And Maradona, you know, went up against, as other number 10s did, went up against what were central defenders that were akin to being, you know, a nemesis, a Bond villain almost sometimes, you know, in the shape of a Gokicea. You know, there was so much violence almost on a football pitch. And, you know, it's still fast and it's still, you know, physical now. But, yeah, when you twist it around that way, to ask a player of now, would they fit in the football of 30 years ago, then that's a truer reflection of how you should look at Maradona.
It's, I mean, obviously, we're here to interview the director, and as much as you and I enjoy chatting with each other, and we are in very plush surroundings in Pancras Square, I think, is where we're at the moment. I do know we're not where I should be, which is at work, which is great for the average Tuesday afternoon. It's not bad as life goes. But yeah, I think, you know, it's... You know, even when hopefully when people have finished listening to this, and obviously you and I chat all the time, but hopefully when they've, you know, listened to Asif as well, and, you know, they'll go and watch it with perhaps, hopefully, a more open mind, I think, about the person and the player, or they'll come away maybe with a more open mind about the person and the player.
Yeah, I think you can't not walk away. No matter, you know, if you go into that movie, if you go to watch that movie and you're anti-Maradona, then, you know, you're still there for a reason, out of some kind of curiosity, you know, some kind of, you know, voyeurism, or, you know, it's as if you're watching a car crash in some manner. But you cannot possibly walk away from whatever you think of him now, you know, whether that's good or bad. You know, your view of him will be different at the end of the film, or certainly enhanced or magnified in some manner. Not different. You know, I still think... You know, I was a Maradona fan going into it. I'm a Maradona fan going out of it. But I view him differently in some manner. You know, an intangible manner as well.
I would absolutely agree with that. You're right. It's difficult. It's all well, you and I sat going, oh, you'll come out with a different perspective. You'll be this, you'll be that. And then if people sat around and went, yeah, but how? I won't be able to answer that.
You can't explain it. Yeah.
Right, I think Asif's in the room now, so obviously I'm guessing that you and I should probably stop yes. chatting with each other, and we should probably get to the main reason why we're here, I guess.
Yes, we should.
So, first of all, Asif, hello, and thank you very much for joining us. Stephen and I have both seen the documentary, and first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
What is an incredible film.
Oh, cool. Oh, good. Good to hear.
It's outstanding. We absolutely loved it. The whole speed of it, the feel of it. As a Maradona fan and a student of him, you know, honestly, you couldn't have done any better with it.
It's fantastic. Perfect. That was a really short interview. Thank you, guys.
So thanks very much. Hey. Congratulations.
We should do this again sometime.
I think, first of all, obviously, Steve and I, you know, we've been seeing, you know, we've chatted about it. And I think probably the first thing we want to ask about is this concept of Diego versus Maradona, which seems to run right through the picture, and whether that was an intentional thing or whether that was something that came out through the footage or through commentary from other participants within it.
Yeah, so the way these films get made, and the kind of habit I've got into is I have no idea what the films are going to be about, apart from the fact we know it's about Maradona. At the beginning, it's really like, I don't try and say this film's going to be about anything particular. It's like, let's just research it. Let's just talk to as many people as possible. Let's cast the net as wide as we can. Let's find out what his childhood was like. Let's find out about his family, find out about his time. I didn't know about Argentinos Juniors before I started, but you go, all right, he started in this team called Argentinos Juniors. Then he went to Boca. There was a long time spent kind of researching a kind of Barcelona period. There's a long time spent after he left Naples, and where did he go to? Oh, he goes to Seville, and then he goes back to Argentina, then he becomes a coach. And, you know, I kind of looked at everything. The film was really long. We had a really long kind of five-hour cut and a four-hour cut. And it was about a year ago, just over a year ago, we had a three-hour cut, which we screened. And it just was interesting watching it with an audience. That's the other thing, is I often do these rough cuts with an audience, which are quite painful because the film's not there yet. And I know it's not there. And the reactions often can be really tough and really nasty. But they're kind of friendly people, but they can be brutally honest. And we watched it and we just went, right, it's not close. We need a lot more time. We've got to crack this. But what was interesting about Diego Maradona's life was he didn't have an obvious rival. I did this other film, Senna and Amy, okay? And with Senna, he had a... We conflated it and shortened his story down to one particular rival, Alain Prost, this French guy who drove in a very different way. His personality was different, and Senna's personality was different. And it was quite cinematic. It was almost like a boxing match in racing cars. With Amy, there were people around her who maybe weren't always making decisions that were good for her. It was her relationship with the kind of entertainment business and the media. And in this film, everyone I talked to said, look, no one tells Diego what to do. He does what he wants to do. You can't force him to do anything. There wasn't an obvious person you could say, oh, maybe this person was the one that made him make that choice. It was all internal. So then out of that, I started talking to people, and people would talk about this kind of which mood he might be in, or which personality. There was a really nice guy, and then there was a really tough guy, and they're all him. So it was Fernando Signorini, who was Diego's trainer, personal trainer, from when he was at Barcelona, when his ankle was broken, who first sort of mentioned this concept of there was Diego and there was Maradona. And I remember hearing it, thinking, oh, I like that. We could do something with that. There's maybe something in this, because it's all an internal struggle. You don't know from day to day which one you're going to meet. You don't know which end of the spectrum you're going to come across. The really sweet guy who, when he's telling you a story and he's smiling and his eyes are bright and light, that you think, I really like this guy. I can only imagine how wonderful it would be to be hanging around with him in Naples in the 80s. And the guy who doesn't like something you ask him very quickly kind of switches down, shuts off, saying, I've been talking to you for too long already, time to go. And that can happen within one interview. So that idea of how do you visualise this story, it became like, and I also want to always come down to like a simple concept that everyone can understand. And that's what it came down to. It's like there's different sides of his personality, and one was called Diego and one was Maradona.
It was great that it's so demonstrable as well, is that, you know, there's a scene in the film where he's playing tennis and he is pure Diego.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's,
yeah, it's so charming, yeah, and funny.
It's facial expressions, yeah. And you see so much of Diego early in the film. And then as the film progresses and it becomes to the eye of the storm, it is so much of
just hardens. You just see his expression is different. It the is, lightness has gone.
Exactly. This you know, almost cartoon character that he has to create,
who we
to,
see
to,
now
to get
you know.
To who we see so often now,
yeah.
And even towards the end of the film and some of the scenes, without giving anything away, you know, you see a re-emergence of Diego, an older Diego, but you know, Diego all the same. So you know, you were given both sides of it, and for me, and I've said it to Stuart, that when I walked away from the film, I said you could have easily made a trilogy about it. There was so much.
Yeah, because I haven't even talked about Armando yet. Yeah, don't even want to go there.
It's funny, you mentioned Amy, and I was obviously preparing this, and I was watching an interview you did with BFI, I think, about Amy, and you mentioned how when you were watching the footage, it was her eyes and face that you noticed with the camera, because there's obviously a lot of camera-to-face shots.
Yeah.
And Steve and I, again, have been chatting, and I think, again, without giving too much away, there's a scene in the airport, and he's being carried through by... And you can see in his eyes that it's almost Terry's... Like, he's lost control of this situation. Yeah. And, again, I suppose the question is, you know, when you're making this type of documentary,
is it sort of the eyes that you almost use to tell the story?
Absolutely, you know, they're the windows to the soul, aren't they? That's the way, particularly because my job is to...
It betrays the feeling, doesn't it? You can't hide anything.
Films are visual, you know, so that's the thing. We've got to find a way to show the story, as well as people talking and you hear things and you have interviews. Because of my background is in kind of a very visual background, I come from an art school background, but also I've been making films for quite a long time where a lot of time there's not very little dialogue. I did fiction films before I did a documentaries. And so the idea is if you can find a shot that tells you something about a character without anyone having to say a word, it's much more powerful than information that you have to read or listen to. And so that moment you talk about is really, it's really pivotal. There's before and after that, really. There's the kid before that, which in my mind is Diego, and that's essentially post-'86 World Cup, isn't it? And then when he wins the World Cup, after that there's someone else, I feel. If you were to simplify it down, because professionally he gets to the top of the mountain, he wins the World Cup, and suddenly, you know, he is loved, the whole of Argentina. And that scene, that one moment, he looks scared. Quite interesting. It is very similar to Amy. There is a moment with Amy where she becomes successful and she looks scared by it. She doesn't seem to be enjoying it. And that's, there's a kind of vulnerability at times in Diego Maradona that I'd never really seen before. When he first comes to Naples and they did a press conference, he doesn't know where the hell he is, I think. You know, he doesn't have any idea what he's getting himself into. On the plane there, he's saying, I want to go somewhere where there's peace and tranquility.
I want
respect and peace. And you're like, you haven't got a clue. You're going to Naples in the 80s. The other thing is, you know, so it's on the pitch he gets to, like, the most successful period of his life. But off the pitch, for me, there's a decision that he makes in his personal life about his son, who he decides not to recognise, which I think that's the turning point off the pitch. And what I was interested in, we watch football, we love football, we see these players, we just expect them to be brilliant all the time if they are on your team. What we have no idea is what's going on through their head. So in this film, what you do is, when he goes to the World Cup, there's a lot of personal turmoil going on in his life, and he's got to block it out and has the best tournament of his life. And then when he comes home, he's got problems at home. And then he's going to go on a pitch and he's going to take Naples to win. You know, that's what I found interesting, is what happens off the pitch in between games. And we get a bit into that, particularly in latter Naples years. You know, a typical week in a day in the life of Diego Maradona is not what you want anyone to be doing as a typical week. But he talks about it. Oh, that all came from him telling me what you do on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, start training on a Thursday, get himself fit by Friday, play on a Sunday and go partying the next few days again.
It's funny you mention that, obviously, in terms of how candid he was then with regards to, you know, with regards to the film. Was he, I imagine him to be, I suppose, you know, you mentioned, depending on what day you catch him on, but I imagine him to be a very much, here it is, this is me, do what you want with it.
I would say it does depend on which day of the week. It does depend on getting him to the place where he's willing to talk about this stuff. Because I think, like a lot of super mega famous people, they've done millions of interviews and you have your set answers. You know, if someone asks you a question about, you know, your time playing, and, you know, he'll tell me a 20-minute great story about Sepp Blatter. And it's like, well, that was not my question. But it's a great story. And you're like, I'm really enjoying this, but I know I'm on the clock and I know that at a certain point I'm going to be kicked out and I haven't really got what I wanted. So you have to then say, that's great, but let's go back to this particular question. And like a lot of people, he has a performance about him. When he's in a good mood, he'll start performing and his voice goes really high-pitched and, you know, he's telling a story. It doesn't help me when I'm cutting these films. When my editor got to cut his voice in order to fit our film, if he's suddenly really, really high-pitched and really, really excitable, and the next minute it's really down and really heavy, and you try and make this work, it gets messy. So you have to somehow calm him down and not go to the performance. Because that's why I don't bring cameras as well. It's not a performance, it's just like, let's talk about this and let's go back and triple-check that we've got our facts right. So it did take a while to get him to talk about certain heavier subjects, but once he got there, I got a feeling. I've never heard him talking about how a typical day in his life was. You know, he went into some more details which are not relevant to this section of the story about, you know, how bad his drug problem got and how much he was doing, how much coke he was doing, like, every day. It was a massive amount. I mean, how does anyone survive that? But it wasn't in the film because that wasn't relevant to our point of the story. It all happened later when it got really, really bad. So, yeah, it was good. He was willing to talk about it. He there was a lot he said he wasn't going to talk about originally. A lot of people, I would just mention names, and he's like, I'm never going to talk about her. Don't ever bring her up again. And you're like, okay, what about this guy here? You know, and I was thinking, these are safe questions. And he was like, ah, he stole money from me. I don't want to talk about him. Thinking, okay, right, my list is getting quite short now. Let's talk about your family, you know. And it was like, let's bring it back somewhere good. So there were definitely moments when he said certain people were out of bounds. Yeah. But I would just have to again save it up to a later interview and I'll come back to them.
It's quite a skill in an art form, I guess. Isn't it?
The challenge is, my problem is I don't speak Argentinian, Spanish or Italian. So the challenge for me was making this film where I couldn't speak directly to people and build up a relationship, and it was all via translation. That was quite hard.
Yeah. We were chatting as well about the breakneck. The breakneck speed, yes, of the film.
Yeah, it's great. From the word go, that car chase essentially sets the tone.
Yeah.
And I think, again, tone is everything within the film, because it's everything I would expect of Maradona. Yet you are given a really raw display of that. You know, it's spectacular. And when we talk about Maradona versus Diego, it's that vulnerability versus his strength as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the editor Chris King is fantastic. He I've been working with him on a few films. He was one of the editors on Senna. He cut Amy, and he's just brilliant. He's a genius, and he has he's technically incredible, and he's really good with music as well. So it's the music and the sound and the effects and the kind of feeling of you being at a football match, together with the kind of voices, all of this coming together technically with, you know, this amazing character. So I think the opening is quite interesting. The car chase, kind of, you know, it's like Italian Job or French Connection.
Yeah. When I sat there, I was like, put the French Connection on it.
It's nuts. But the idea of, you know, He. This is how he lived, you know, fast.
Yeah.
That section of the film, you know, in an earlier cut was 45 minutes. Everything from Argentina, when he was a kid, Boca Juniors, getting to Barcelona, being the kind of great hope, leg break, kind of all of the injuries and the ups and downs and the kind of problems he had there. It was a long section of film. And then the film started in Naples, so we had to make a really tough call.
Yeah.
Great footage. If you're a football fan, I mean, it was all amazing stuff that you've just never seen or nothing you know about. And Barcelona then, at the time when he arrived, they hadn't won a championship for like 10 years. They were not the team that they are, you know, the Pep's team or Cruyff's team. They were like, they weren't really that special. And Bilbao were really strong and all of these Basque teams were really good. So he was a great hope. And he goes there and he has an awful time. He has an absolute disastrous time. And they kind of chase him out of town, you know. They don't like him. They don't want him. They don't let him do what he wants. He's not allowed to par. You're not allowed to go out. All of that, my editor and I said, let's make that car chase. That all of this is happening. It's just building up to Naples. So it goes from 45 minutes to like 5 minutes of craziness.
Yeah.
And it's pretty mad and intense, but it's a good way into the movie, I guess.
I was going to say, it sets the tone. Like you say, I mean, it's a crazy life. Clearly that he led in Naples.
Before the movie begins, yeah, you know, that he's done all of that already. Everyone else would make a film just about that.
And I think you forget how young he was as well. And again, that we've all mentioned that vulnerability. And I think the walking into the Sao Paulo, and it's almost gladiatorial. The high walls and the way that
the stadium's built there. And it's this huge amphitheatre. Yeah. And the fact that you're underneath it as well. And
it's great. I love that. I mean, it's kind of gladiator, but it's also like Mean Streets or something. You know, there's an element of like an early Scorsese film about this, I feel like. Yeah. And it becomes more and more like that at the ending. You know, he's like a street guy. That's the thing. Yeah. He's a footballer, but he's also someone from like some really rough part of Villafurito, this suburb of Argentina, Buenos Aires rather. And the guy's tough. He is street tough, right? So he doesn't take crap anywhere. And so there's something about him walking out. He looks like a great footballer, but he also does have a kind of gangstery vibe about him.
Yeah.
And again, we've been chatting about that. I think in the 86 World Cup, you only have to look at those two goals in the quarterfinal to see the genius and the almost the street urchin doing whatever it takes.
And he's done that many times. I've seen probably him do that trick four or five times in his career. Maybe three times he got away with it, twice he got, you know, whistled. But he's done that many times, as players do. If they have a trick, you know, certain players we all know who are really good at tripping themselves up and getting a penalty. They keep doing it, so they're obviously good. Someone somewhere practices that, and when it's your guy, you don't care.
No, you don't care.
So you know, and when it's on the other side, you hate him.
And I think even from a detached point of view, you know, if you could watch it from a detached point of view, there's a degree of genius to it as well. You know, I think there's immense beauty in that, in both of those goals that he scores against them.
He anticipates the ball being there,
yep,
and he gets up there, and he has the nerve to do it, and he's, like you said, I tried it, I looked, and the referee wasn't sure, and gave the goal, I'll take it.
I think there's just such beauty in it. There's a Zapruder kind of effect to it as well, in that if you see any of the still footage, the still photos of that incident, not one of the pictures, the photographs, catches the moment where the ball touches his hand.
Yeah.
And it's almost that this crime that's been committed should have been obvious to the world, when, well, it wasn't. When played out in real time,
no one saw it.
No one saw it. Yeah. You know, Barry Davis commentates on it for BBC, and he needs this to filter through to him through the commentary box, and no one saw it. It's not the obvious crime that everyone eventually saw it to be.
No, it's just that's football, isn't it? Football's a game of deceit. I love that line. So he got that line from Cesar Menotti, his old coach from Argentina, who, you know, but in a way the point is it's about trickery. And if you are brilliant, if you're Maradona, everything about you, you're so much cleverer than everyone else, you're so much more gifted than everyone else. The idea of you throw them, you're going to go that way, you go that way. You know, you think, I'm going to chip it this corner, I'm going to pray in that corner. That's what it is. But with him, that's how he lived, that's how he was off the pitch and on the pitch.
Yeah.
It's all about trickery and deceit.
That is him. It's nothing else. It's him. Yeah. You know, you get so many stories of football players who take this persona onto the pitch, and it's not really their personality off the pitch. You know, Roy Keane's an example of that. You know, people say this aggressive person on the pitch.
Yeah,
he's quite mad mannered off the pitch.
Really?
But then Maradona is kind of like he's just purely himself on off the pitch.
I think so.
I mean, obviously, you've had so much access to so much footage that we've not seen. And like I said, Steve and I have been in touch constantly since we both saw this bit. And what do you think about this bit? Did this bit mean this bit? And we both sort of noticed once the pleas made to Napoli's president, you know, to sell me, and you know, he realizes he's losing control in this city, and the city's taking him over, and you can almost see within him. You know, he's desperate to get out, and you know, we were saying when they won that second Serie A title, everything is just—it's almost like a sense of duty. I think you said, didn't you?
Yeah.
It's a sense of duty that he's playing now.
He still fulfills
Napoli,
though, because he still attains that on-pitch perfection.
There's a really interesting thing that, you know, football fans would understand, but it's not the details in the film. He's pre-Bosman, so he had a contract with Naples. He can't leave.
Yeah.
They've got him. They tell him where to go, you know, when to leave. And so that's the detail. He wants to leave, but now players can just say, I'm going on strike, I'm out, let me go. Those days, if the owner says, nope, I'm keeping you, then he can't go anywhere. And he was desperate to go to Marseille. That's where he wanted to leave for. And they were willing to pay a lot of money to take him. And at the time, Marseille were about to go into massive, like, you know, they won a European Cup in a couple of years' time. And somewhere in there, he wanted to get out because he just thought, it's time to go. This is getting too heavy, too intense. And yeah, so the whole Bosman, all of these things are all a part of this, the subtext of what's going on there. But you're right, they do win the title again. And at the time, he wasn't really training. I talked to some of the players, but they were like, we don't care. We don't mind if he doesn't train. If he turns up on the pitch, we feel better. We feel more confident. We feel we can beat anyone. And by the time of the second Scudetto, the squad is much stronger. You know, they had Correa, they had Alamau, they had some really good players. And I think they weren't solely relying on him, but he still did things.
Also become used to success as well, because you can see the difference between
the
success of 87 to the success of 1990. It's still enjoyed in 1990, but it's not as raw.
It's not the same.
There's that initial hit of burst of success in 87.
Even the fans have said, you know, the second title was not the same as that first one, and a kind of outpouring of joy. They obviously enjoyed it, but it was more complex and tainted slightly.
I suppose, you know, a final question, if you like, your perception of him then, from the beginning of this, the initial idea of this project of putting together a film about this player and this person, and then the finished product, was there a a change in your perception, either as a footballer, as a man, as a character, as a, you know.
I mean, the main thing, I guess, is I've met the guy now and I've seen what he's like, and, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I, like everyone, will have seen footage of him when he was at his worst and he was really obese and really big, and you think, what happened? How did that? And when I see him now, when I met him most recently, he looked good. He looked like how a man of nearly 60 should look. He's led many lives. You know, he's died many times and he still comes back again. You know, the guy is so tough mentally and physically. You know, I've seen he's still got legs like tree trunks. He still tries to play football whenever he can. You know, he still enjoys playing more than anything in life, you know, which if you're a fan of football, whatever you do, you know, the one moment where you can forget all your stresses and bills and family is when you're kicking a ball around.
As soon as the ball's at your feet. Then,
yeah. You know, and so I like that simplicity, I guess, in him. I liked him. I wouldn't say I got that close to him necessarily. I did kick a ball with him, which is, like, you know, pretty mad. Oh. I did do that, which, you know, I'm all right. I'll take that.
Yeah, really.
I've got to tell you one story, right? So this is what I've been lucky enough to meet lots of famous people. I've met movie stars and directors and artists and people like that. And, you know, it's cool. Some of them have something, a charisma. Many of them don't, actually. When you meet them, they're quite ordinary. Diego's got something. When he's telling you a tale and a story, you're in there with him. But there was one particular moment when one of the first proper interviews I did, I was the sound recordist myself. We're sitting on his sofa and he's watching a Boca game on TV. When he went out to the loo or something, I turned the volume off because he had a volume on. I'm trying to do an interview. So I'm there with one other person who's translating, and every time he answered, he'd sort of be off mic. So I thought, I've got to get him talking into the mic. I might have to use this interview. So the only way I could do it was if I sit on the floor by his feet next to the microphone. When he answers to me, he's on mic. So he's got his coffee table and he's watching Boca on TV, and I'm sitting there at his feet. And as he's answering, I can't help it. My eyes sort of slowly come down. I'm going, wow, it's Diego Maradona's legs. Look at those legs. I mean, his thighs are like massive. And I'm just going, that's Maradona's legs. That's amazing. Look how fit he is. Then my eyes go down and go, my God, that's Maradona's left foot. I'm sitting at Diego Maradona's feet. And I had this urge that I've never had before or since to touch his foot. I just wanted to reach. I go, would he mind if I just reached out and touched his left foot? And so he's answering a question about something else. And with no link, there was no reason at all, I just went, was this the foot that they broke? And basically reached out and grabbed his ankle and he pushed me off. He doesn't really like being touched, but I just was like, I had this urge to touch him, which in the film is part of the story. You know, he hates it. Everyone's always grabbing him in Naples. But and it's terrible that I did that. It's very unprofessional, but I just had this urge to touch Maradona's left foot as I was sat at his feet, you know, listening to the man. And so I don't know where that came from. Like I said, I've never had it before or since with anyone else, but there was something about him. It wasn't like I was desperate to get his autograph or desperate to get a selfie. I just wanted to touch his foot. And I did. So I played football and I touched his left foot. But that is something. He has a presence and he has a little light and he has charisma, which very few people do. And he has it because of his personality, I guess. He has a larger than life personality and he's still got it. You know, he's still got it. When he's in the right frame of mind, you just feel like this guy is amazing.
Brilliant. Wonderful. I think that's a perfect way to end. Ashley, thank you so much. Thanks so much for your time and agreeing to join us.
Yes, thank you very, very much.
Thanks, guys.
Brilliant. Thank you. Okay. Asif's gone, Stephen. So I think we're safe to talk about him now. I think,
yes.
First of all, what a great guy. What a great guy to interview.
Yeah, just an absolute gift of an interview, really. I mean, he's so forthcoming with everything that we veered the conversation towards, and you know, he seriously could have chatted on for twice as long if his staff would.
I've got to say, obviously he probably won't get picked up on the podcast, but after 20 minutes, someone walked in and gave us, sort of held up 5 minutes, and I was like, no, thinking, no, that can't be right. And then obviously when he launched into, I must just tell you this story, I was like, yes, I'm all over this. Yes. If you've got to tell it, they can't interrupt us and stop it.
And we can't be told, we can't get told off if the director wants to keep on.
Absolutely. it's funny, isn't it? People hear what we've just talked about, but what doesn't come across, certainly in the podcast, is obviously sort of, you know, what's in the eyes, and you could see, couldn't you, all the way through the interview, is his absolute passion. I mean, clearly it's, you know, it's his film, his movie, yeah, his baby, but the absolute passion for the subject and for Maradona as a person, it was right there, wasn't it?
Completely, you know, the anecdote of him being sat in front of him, you know, and suddenly realising, hang on a minute, that's Maradona's left foot, and you know, it's, you know, that sparkle in the eye, and you can see there's a, you know, a true Maradona acolyte there. You know, we're not just talking about a random topic or subject matter that's been picked up and think, oh, that'll make a great film. This has been made as a labour of love. You know, that was resoundingly clear. And what was impressive to me as well was that I can remember reading an article, a review in The Guardian, that someone had watched it, I forget who wrote it, but someone had been lucky, even luckier than us, to go and watch the film in Cannes at the Cannes Film Festival. And they'd questioned whether the retrospective Maradona interjections, his monologues, were older footage or you know, accumulated from other interviews or anything like that. But from what, you know, Asif, as soon as he mentioned, you know, the access to him and talking to him, that just blew that completely out of the water. It was kind of like, yes, he spoke to him and he got access to him and he was up front with him and there he was, you know. And so he got to be able to, you know, and that would have transmitted itself into the film itself. You know, if you're trying to tell a story about someone, how better to be able to do that than having had that first, you know, first touch and contact with him.
It, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's funny when we're sat listening to him, when he said, oh, you know, I got to, you know, I didn't get an autograph, I didn't get a selfie, but what I actually did was I got to play with him, and you're like, and I was like, oh my God, yeah, that's exactly what, if I could pick picture, autograph or playing, you'd pick playing all day.
I'd take kicking a ball with someone like that well ahead of an autograph.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you, like I say, you could just see it was, you know, at that moment in time, it was more like he was a football fan other than a film director. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, there was the inner child speaking there, and it was brilliant to see. You know, but that's it. You know, you can lose an autograph, you know, you can misplace it somewhere, you can forget where you've filed it, but with the memory of kind of like Maradona rolled the ball to me, you know, and I kicked it back, you know, you're never going to forget that, no matter what happens in your life. You know, I've passed a football to Diego Maradona. Yeah. You know, I've never been in a room with anyone who's been able to say that.
I would just dine out on it for life. And it you know, you could, it's funny because obviously, you know, with his other two documentaries, with sort of, you know, with Senna and Amy Winehouse, you know, and sort of the very early and untimely deaths, and I think there's almost a sense of, you know, because you mentioned how close and at times literally Maradona died, but you know, there's almost, yeah, that sort of, you know, he was almost rooting for him. I think it's probably safe to say that, you know, during the making of the film, he was actually rooting for him to be well, you know, as a person now, you know, and lead that healthier lifestyle.
It's kind of like plugging. I mean, the great thing about the film is, or the you know, the gist of the film is this concept of the character of Maradona and the reality of Diego, and how he cultivates this character of a football player that cannot show any weaknesses, whereas Diego clearly does have weaknesses. And I think the way that he plots the film, it shows that he is wanting, you know, an eventual kind of reclaiming of Diego by him, you know, for not just him and not just the people who will watch the movie, but for the man himself.
Yeah.
You know, to eventually, you know, almost shed, you know, the Maradona side of him eventually. You know, where is the need for him, you know, for at some point in his life, you know, he can maybe let go of it.
I think you're right, and I think, you know, as you were chatting here, I know they're going to come and move us out of this office in a minute. I know they are, but until they do, you know, I'm hoping that this film will, you know, people mention Maradona, and straight away it's the 86, you know, sort of World Cup quarterfinal against England, and then, but for a, you know, certainly for a younger generations, it's always been really hard to explain either how good he was, how much of a, not a warped genius, but how he lived literally on the right on the edge, lived his life on the edge, played the game on the edge, but I hope that, you know, certainly for younger football fans, or, you know, the sort of the Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo generation, you know, hopefully this will give them an appreciation of a footballer who was just as good, if not better. You know, and this will tell, you know, this will hopefully bring that to them, and it won't just be, oh, you know, is that the guy who handballed it? Is that the guy who was going mental in the stands at the World Cup?
Yeah. It's the shedding of the cartoon character, basically, yeah, isn't it? It's the stripping away of all the veneer and the, you know, the storyboard version of him, and seeing something that was very, very real and very, very human. And that's the thing, that over, you know, 30 odd years, there's been a part of me, the media, that has basically just set out to demonise him, to turn him into this, you know, anti-Christ of football almost. And it's great that there's this, you know, film there now that takes that away. I mean, no one is claiming that Maradona is perfect, and all isn't, but that's the great thing about the movie as well, is that it shows the human version of him, but it illuminates all the imperfections and all of the failures that were part of and parcel of him.
I think that's a great way to finish. Like I say, they're going to come and, I know they're going to come and move us at any point, and you and I at some point are going to have to just go back home, go back to our normal lives.
Unless we claim stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they'll love that. Stephen, thank you. Well, first of all, for joining me down here in London, but I'm
no problem. That's been.
I was going to say, I'm sure none of this has been a chore.
No.
Thank you to Asif, obviously, for his time, you know, that he gave us this afternoon. Thank you for. I don't even know who to thank. Who arranged the screening? I'm just going to put it out there as a generic thank you. I'm not really, anyone can take the credit for that one, but certainly thank you for inviting us to the early screening of the film. And, you know, like I say, hopefully, you know, people have been listening to this. I'm pretty sure if they're listening to it, they're going to go and see it anyway. But, you know, if we manage to attract just a few more who maybe might not have gone to see it, you know, absolutely, you know, I implore you to go and see the film.
Definitely. You can't not love the movie. You can't not love that. You'll see it and you'll
be brilliant. Right, well, all that's left me to say is thank you to Asif, who's now gone, I'm assuming, to bigger and better things than you and I. Thank you, Stephen, for joining me, and thank you to all the listeners. Please join us again for another edition of probably not quite such a cosmopolitan episode of the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.